Hi, welcome back to Glossophilia's new podcast series. I'm Louise.
And I'm Paul. And we've got another, what we hope will be relevant topic to discuss today.
I think it's relevant. Basically, a third of the world's population is in lockdown. That means that more than 3 billion people around the world have been asked to stay at home.
Or simply stay home.
Well, that's another story. We can discuss that later.
All right.
But that simple statement, to stay home or stay at home, begs an important question. And that's what we're going to be discussing today. Just what and where exactly is home? I mean, is it really just where the heart is, as the proverb suggests? What does it really mean? It's a word that has so many different meanings. It means different things to different people, whoever's writing it or talking about it. And it even sort of bends and changes according to the context and the perspective of the people using that word.
Right. And when you think about it, Louise, it is curious because no matter what the context, for instance, if you and I were sitting together, or you and someone you didn't know were sitting together in a bar and they were to ask you, so where's home? Or where's home for you? Your answer could be the Upper East Side. Could be anywhere in New York that you lived. I mean, you would probably get very local. But if someone were to ask you that in an airport or in a foreign country, let's say, you're sitting in London and someone, well, let's say someone asks me, I might be a lot broader. Well, I live in the U.S.
Yeah.
What we call home or even how we describe home changes depending on the way and the context in which it's asked.
Right. And who you're talking to and what they already know about you and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it's a question I'm often asked. Where is home, or are you ever thinking about returning home? Now, in my case, because I'm an American as well as a Brit, and I've been living in America for many years, I think when they ask me that, they're talking about England, Britain. But actually, my father was in the Foreign Office, so my home as I was growing up was all over the world. So it never really had a geographical sense to me. It was more, my home was where my parents happened to be at any given time.
And that would change.
And that would change. I was also at boarding school, so that was something of a home too. So for me, home has so many different meanings, although technically my home is on the Upper West Side of New York.
There are so many ways that we talk about home and what it means to people, as both a place and as an idea, even.
Right.
And I think it's really complicated, and why it's worth in this program to sort of pull it apart, or at least look at it a little.
Yeah.
It's the place that gives people a sense of belonging. I mean, it's a spatial metaphor that we use all the time when you think about it. You know, home is where the heart is, metaphorically speaking, or there's no place like home, you know. Common usages that we have. But I think you could also think of it as an ideological construct. That sounds rather fancy for just saying that it really is created from people's emotional experiences. I think that's how most people end up defining home for themselves, where they happen to live, or as you were just discussing, where they have lived previously. Because I think for a lot of people, memory plays a big part in their definition of home. It may not be where they are anymore, for instance. So I was reading a really interesting piece by a guy named Peter Somerville, who is with the Policy Studies Research Center at University of Lincoln in your Lincolnshire. And he had what I thought was a really interesting list of what he called connotations as a way of defining what we mean when we think about home. So quickly, I'm going to run through this list and tell me what you think. The first on his list was shelter, which is pretty straightforward. It's the material condition. It's the roof over your head, simply, your protection from the elements.
And actually, at the moment, we're being asked to shelter in place and shelter at home.
Another one. The second on his list was hearth, which I thought was an interesting one, indicating warmth and in a larger sense, your emotional and physical well-being. Your ability to relax at home and hearth. His third was heart, and in that sense, he relates it to love, to have, you know, the first place you have, probably, your loving and most caring relationships, and possibly your greatest emotional happiness. And then there was one that I thought was really interesting, privacy. and what a critical element that is to home. Mm-hmm. The element of control, the fact that you can shut the door behind you and expect or demand some form of, you know, a right to privacy, a right to be alone. Another one, which again strikes the ear kind of weirdly, abode, but it, as he describes it, it's simply a place where you can rest, a place where you can live comfortably and sleep in peace, kind of a general definition. And then finally, it was roots, the place that you think of that is the source of your family. It's where you grew up. It's where you're from, as we say, or even who you're from, the place where your parents are. And then the seventh one, which he put as an optional element on his list, was one called paradise, which really sounded odd at first. But what he describes is that paradise is an ideal home. It could be the place of your spiritual bliss. It could be what you might term your final resting place, as in, Lord, I'm coming home. But he was very clear to say, this one's optional, because for a lot of people, there may not be such a thing.
That's not something we think about.
Yeah. Or they've chosen, you know, they're completely atheistic and don't think that's ever going to happen. So,
right. An interesting thing about those seven ideologies or concepts is that most of them, if not all of them, are positive things. That you're talking about peace and comfort and ease and control, you know, this feeling. But actually, home doesn't always necessarily have that positive association,
does
it?
No, that's a good point. No, that's a very good point. Because I can remember, for instance, when I was a child, there was an expression like, he had spent many years in a home.
Yes.
And it was just a home.
Right.
Now, even at a really young age, you had to wonder and you had to sort of source out for yourself what that meant exactly.
What sort of home?
I mean, depending on who it was you were talking about, it could have been he came from an orphanage, or he had spent some time in a mental institution,
or foster home, or foster care,
or
yes.
Yeah. That always struck me as odd. Like, oh yeah, he's been in a home.
In a home.
Because
and yet
know,
we're all
we we've all been in a home.
A home.
But yeah,
knew.
It had some really heavy sort of associations that went along with it. I don't know. Do you use that term?
Well, I feel as if it might be something I haven't heard for a while, but I certainly remember.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the British versus American differences in language, I've been listening to the BBC quite a bit lately, and they use this wonderful term, which sounds standard, something called a care home. So what we would refer to here as an old folks home or retirement home
or a nursing home
are generally referred to in Britain, and maybe that's because of the NHS, as a care home.
Yes.
And I thought, doesn't that sound so much nicer? Somebody cares. Somebody's caring for you.
Yes. I'd never thought of it that way, because I think of when I think of care in the UK or growing up, I would think of people being taken into care, which isn't necessarily a very positive thing.
And what are the associations there? You're going to be in some sort of
that you're taken out
setup,
of your home and into care, I guess, yes, which is going back to our earlier thing about a home.
Right.
But I hadn't thought of it that way, that care has that very nurturing, positive connotation.
Well, it just sounds better to me than an old folks' home
or
a children's home. You know,
which is just kind of
associations of coldness, basically.
Yeah.
Another term, I don't know if again, this is one you're familiar with, a broken home. Have you ever heard the expression, he or she is from a broken home?
Yeah. That was very common when I was younger. We
me too,
a lot.
And it's a good point. You don't hear it so much anymore.
No.
But even as a child, I remember thinking, what does that mean exactly? What is a broken home? I think largely it probably meant divorce back then.
I think that's how I understood it mainly.
But it could have been, you know, somebody becoming unemployed or somebody dying in the household. Maybe that's why it's not used so much anymore, because divorce is not such a great big stigma.
Exactly. And so many people do come from the homes of divorced parents, so it's not such a, it doesn't have such a negative connotation. it's interesting. We've talked about all these different associations and connotations and meaning and everything. So it's actually not very surprising that when we come to the word home in a sort of linguistic dictionary sense, it's huge. The Oxford English Dictionary lists no less than 1,373 definitions for the word home.
Oh, that's a lot. That's a lot.
And in fact, even the shorter Oxford Dictionary gives the word a whole page of its own. And I mean, the shorter Oxford Dictionary is a two-volume edition, but nevertheless, considering it covers every English word from 1700 to the present day, one whole page is, that's quite big. So it's a big word. Mm. It also doesn't come as much of a surprise that as well as having all these definitions, there's something else that's quite notable about that word. Because as well as being a noun, and we've discussed it mainly until now as a noun, it also steps out in three different outfits, in three different sort of speech parts. It's also an adjective, and it's an adverb, and it's a verb. Hmm. So it's a pretty busy word, actually.
it certainly sounds like. Adverb? Exactly how does it work as an adverb?
Well, as an adverb, it's curious, actually. What it does is it strips itself right down and it loses its, you know, the home or my home or her home. It takes all that away and it literally just tags itself to the end of the verb that you're discussing. So if you're going home. You're not going to my home or to mm-hmm. a home. You're just going home. Similarly, if you're trying to get home or you're running home, or you're even being home. It's interesting. So the word home suddenly on its own just becomes, it's modifying or it's explaining the location of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it is an adverb. And then it's also a verb in itself, mm-hmm. rather unusual mm-hmm. verb.
Can you give me an example there?
Well, it homes in on something. We home in on something.
Wait, 1 second. So homes in, it's not hones in. I think I've probably been misstating this the whole time. there is a word, hone, H-O-N-E. Yeah?
There is. And in fact, that's a very common usage of that. A lot of people use the word hone when originally that expression or that usage is using the word home. I think that's interesting because the act of targeting, focusing in on something very directly and accurately, you home in on a target or you home in on a destination, it gets to that concept of home being the heart of something or the very essence of something to me.
Right.
So mm-hmm. homing in is like getting to the heart of something.
Right. Whereas no, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I interrupt you. Hone is to polish
Yes, to polish, refine, sort of tweak. And uh-huh. it has a different meaning, but it you're not alone in thinking that hone in on is the expression to the extent that it's now regarded, it's accepted as standard English, British English and American English. It's often written in mainstream writing and things. So, but it was originally, and it still is, home in on. And that brings us to the fact that home is actually used in very many phrases, not just homing in on something, but it's very widely used. And it's often referring to that metaphorical place of ease or comfort that you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. For example,
well, like in the expression at home, or I feel so at home here, or you know, meaning I'm feeling so comfortable.
Right. Yeah.
Which I understand goes way, way back. Something uh-huh. I saw in my notes earlier, that the expression at home goes back to 1510.
Is
that really possible? These connotations, as we've been talking about, really are quite deep and
they
historical.
Are, yeah. There's a home from home, mm-hmm. or a home away from home.
Home away from home, as we would say, yeah.
Yeah, where you're comfortable somewhere, as comfortable somewhere else as you are in your own dwelling or abode.
And, you know, similarly, as we were speaking before about how there are both positives and negatives related to this, I'm as I hear you say that, I'm also thinking there's a downside to phrases that use the word home, too, like to hit home, to make someone sort of uncomfortable by an observation they might rather not have.
Right. Yes. Or to bring something home to someone. Mm-hmm. It brings it home to me, you know.
Right.
And that's an understanding of something that perhaps, you know, it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's an unpleasant truth.
Yeah, or to hit close to home, for instance, is mm-hmm. another one. And mm-hmm. that's wild.
It's very close to home.
It's amazing how broad this term is.
Or even to drive something home.
Right.
Where you're...
A point that might be uncomfortable.
Yeah, through sort of forceful argument or something, you're driving a truth home.
But on the lighter side, there's always one of my favorites, and I actually still use it, is nothing to write home about.
Right.
Which, yeah, you know, define so much.
Yeah. And then there are a couple of home expressions that I don't think you have here, but we have on the other side of the Atlantic. One is home and dry.
I only know it from a very popular Pet Shop Boys song from the late 80s.
I don't actually know that song.
I had to actually look it up, to be honest. I didn't. It was the chorus, and it went on and on and on. And I'm thinking, what are you saying? I had really no idea. It's a beautiful song, by the way.
By the way, it means to achieve your goal or your objective. You know, you're home and dry. You've done it. Whatever it is you set out to do. Yeah. And then there's another one. What's the other one?
There's one I've heard you use. How does it go? What's so-and-so like when they're at home? Or how does that
right. go? Right. So who's Peter when he's at home?
Yeah, exactly. That's the one.
And it basically means... A bit like what you were talking about earlier, this concept of privacy and control and being able to shut the door. It's mm-hmm. really, what does he get up to behind closed doors? You know, it's a question of identity, but with a sort of humorous, slightly lighthearted twist to it.
Yeah, I love that expression, actually.
Yeah.
That reminds me, last week I was on the phone with a friend in Dublin, and she was sitting in her kitchen working from home, as so many of us do now. And she said to me, you know, Paul, one of the great things about working from home is that you don't have to wear a bra. Really? I said, kind of surprised. I didn't realize that was such a big deal, or that they were really that uncomfortable. Huh, she said, every woman I know, that's the first thing they do when they get home is take off their bra. Okay, I said, well, now I know. And it occurs to me that now I know, maybe more than I'd like, who's Sorsha when she's at home.
Now, is there a male equivalent to that?
A male no, actually. Are you kidding? Men would never stand for it in the first place. And ever since the invention of boxer shorts, there's nothing being held back, I think.
Now, talking of British and American expressions. I saw a cartoon recently. It was a picture of two policemen who were scolding a couple who were breaking the lockdown, and both were pointing angrily at this couple. And the regular cop is saying to them, stay home. And the grammar cop is correcting him and shouting, stay at home.
So is there really a difference? I mean...
Well, there is a difference because... essentially, the difference is that you'll hear stay home more in North America. And I think that's partly that the Americans are generally just more direct. I mean, that sounds much more imperative, stay home.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And the English.
And as you can see, it's been adopted everywhere. I mean, you see it on billboards now.
Yep. It even has an Instagram sticker, stay home.
Okay.
And the Brits, I think, are a little more proper, and they say stay at home. So I'm not sure if it's really a grammatical thing, because as we said earlier, stay home is actually using home as an adverb. That's simply, it is correct. Oh. It's not a grammatical error, but it's a transatlantic difference between us. Yeah. There's another interesting British American thing to do with the word home. And my oldest daughter was in a Broadway production of A Christmas Carol when she was little, based on the Dickens novel. Mm-hmm. And they had a song in the show called There's a Place Called Home. And they had hired a dialect coach to help the American cast learn how to speak with British accents. The one word that they couldn't master and she couldn't persuade them to master was the word home. She was tearing her hair out trying to get them to say home with a British accent.
Is there really that much of a difference in the pronunciation?
I think there is. Let's try it, shall we? When I say it, I say home.
And I say home.
I think they sound very different.
And what do you hear is the difference?
What I do know is that that sound O is actually a diphthong, i.e. it's two vowel sounds. It's a big R sound followed by an O sound. So perhaps we Brits do that more clearly or effectively.
Or perhaps of course you would think so. But
I don't know what it is, but I think it's funny that was...
I'm sorry, do it again one more time, just to hear your pronunciation.
Home.
Home.
Sounds a little more like it.
Home. Yeah. Actually, you know, it feels different in the mouth, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think as we say home, it's kind of a thrust of air from the back of your throat. And the way you say it, it sits more forward.
It sits more at the front of our mouths. I think that might be what's behind it.
Yeah, curious. Yeah,
and I find that curious.
Sure, we've got many examples of these. Home. To the end here, our poetry feature. I would really said something in our last episode, something I hope we can continue.
Let's each read a poem. You first.
Yeah. I've selected a poem by Emily Dickinson just because I love Emily Dickinson. And in keeping with our theme, it's one of her poems related to the subject of home. And it's called I Dwell in Possibility. I dwell in possibility, a fairer house than prose. More numerous of windows, superior for doors. Of chambers as the cedars, impregnable of eye. And for an everlasting roof, the gambrels of the sky. Of visitors, the fairest. For occupation, this. The spreading wide my narrow hands to gather paradise. I love what she's up to in that poem. The importance of poetry over prose, the way she relates the house and the many windows and doors as many ways of interpreting the same thing. It's just rich with allusion. And
she closes
it ends with paradise.
I was going to say, with the word paradise.
Which is a really curious coincidence.
Yeah. Well, the poem I've chosen is it's quite appropriate for our times. It's by Robert Louis Stevenson, who was a British poet, and it's called To Friends at Home, of course. Mm-hmm. I think all of my friends are at home. To friends at home, the lone, the admired, the lost, the gracious old, the lovely young, to May, the fair, December, the beloved, these from my blue horizon and green isles. These from this pinnacle of distances, I, the unforgetful, dedicate.
It's beautiful. And yeah, quite poignant.
And it seems a fitting way to end our discussion about home.
Indeed.
So, from mine to yours, Paul.
And to yours too, Louise.
Until next time.
Yeah. Oh, and let's do thank our producer, good old Lily Wen. Because we do appreciate her amazing remote help.
Right. Thanks, Lily.
Okay, bye.
Until next time. Bye-bye.
Home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy.